so getting back to where I was before, I was talking about various types of recycling that I don't talk about, but I just want to run through a few. This is an example of irrigation recycling, or collecting irrigation return flows and pumping them back up for use as irrigation water. Industrial recycling is a potentially large producer of recycled water. This is a picture from Bakersfield area of produced water from oil production. They treat it and use it for irrigation and some of the, especially the citrus growing there. Other types of industrial recycling include wineries and vegetable processing facilities, other food processing facilities, dairies. I don't know if that's treated yet or not.
No.
I hope not.
Patrick deals with this a lot.
I actually think that that's Coelho, I believe, right?
Yeah.
That's Coelho's system. I mean, the utilization of produced water from oil field operations is something that Central Valley Board is continuing to study. We have a working group of academics that are working to ascertain whether this practice poses any risk whatsoever. The literature reviews thus far have showed that it doesn't. Frankly, a lot of water, you know, even the color and consistency of that, isn't that much different than a lot of the groundwater in that area. I mean, that's the any port in a storm type of thing in terms of how they utilize the water resources in that area. But in some of the oil fields in this area, you're talking about for every barrel that you pull up, in some cases you're pulling out as many as 8 barrels of water, and figuring out a way to use that water and not inject it back into the ground, if appropriate, is something that is everybody in that area is really, really trying to study, because that's a huge, huge resource that could be utilized. Now, these days with oil prices as they are, you know, there's a little bit of a slump in production in that area, but we anticipate that those prices will go back up at one point in time, and you know, there will be another drought, and those confluence of two drivers in that area merit a lot of hard looks at this practice. It's been going on for about 40 years. It's nothing new, and a lot of fruit tree crops are irrigated with that right now.
So I'm going to jump in here and also acknowledge that we have two reuse scenarios in our region with respect to produced water from oil fields. We have what's dropped into Pismo Creek from the Arroyo Grande oil field, so that's a surface water discharge of cleaned up produced water. And then we also have a groundwater percolation project in the San Ardo oil field, southern end of Monterey County, that is basically perking water to groundwater that has been used in the downgradient ag and rural community.
Those are both RO treated, right?
Right.
Is it?
Coelho is not. The treatment process is actually fairly rudimentary there. They really just walnut hulls are essentially one of the big, and they just put that water through a skimming process to skim off any valuable product, and then they'll filter it through packed walnut hulls, and that's essentially the treatment. So I think this actually could be water coming out of their facility already and put into some of the irrigation canals in that area. I would also take pains to emphasize that no wells that have been fracked are contributing to irrigation of food crops. That's an issue that certainly the oil industry would like to study, because they would like to review that and see if they can use that. And the state has thus far, and our region has thus far, said no to that, pending a lot more study of that issue and any potential consequences due to fracking constituents.
So next slide shows the distinction that John mentioned earlier about recycling as defined by
the state regulations versus reuse or incidental reuse. This is the confluence of the city of San Luis Obispo's wastewater discharge on the left and the San Luis Obispo Creek on the right. This is not technically recycling as defined by the Division of Drinking Water, but it has important habitat and groundwater recharge value. And there's a number of these types of discharges in our region, about a dozen, where we have treated wastewater going to freshwater inlet surface waters. And then here is another example of municipal wastewater being reused and disposed of in the community. This is Los Osos. And let me orient a little bit. The new wastewater treatment plant for Los Osos is right here on the east side of town. This is Los Osos Valley Road out toward Montana Nero. This is the bay, South Bay Boulevard going up this direction. So what we have here is reuse areas in green. The reuse areas right around the plant are ag reuse. Future, they haven't started reusing yet. They just barely started operating the plant. And then the smaller green areas throughout the urban area are parks and schools that will use recycled water for irrigation. So the green areas will definitely have to comply with Title II regulations for recycled water, recycled domestic wastewater. However, what Los Osos is doing right now for disposal is sending this water. It's the same exact water through the same exact purple pipes, but it's going to two leach fields, Roderson leach field here and the Bay Ridge Heights leach fields up here. So you have the same water running through the same system, but in some cases it's called recycling, in some cases it's not. The next slide is one from your staff report. This shows recycled water use statewide in 2009. And I tried to get an update, but apparently the state has finished a 2015 survey, but hasn't released the data yet. So I think we have to show here. So we're using 2009 data. And it's a statewide survey. So the state board had to survey each producer of recycled water to find out how much they used in 2009 and what the use was. There's no easy way to collect this data out of existing statewide data systems. Which brings up a good question, I think, for us, is how we can improve our data collection systems. Michael likes to say, you can't what gets measured gets done. So if we're not measuring what we're recycling, it's hard to determine what we're doing and how we can do a better job. So that, I think, is an action item that we can think about and maybe talk about today and in the future about how we can improve measurement and data storage so that we know we can improve our recycling. What this does show is that in 2009 and statewide, it was about 60% of the recycled water was used for irrigation, golf course irrigation, landscape irrigation, and ag irrigation. I'm guessing the numbers are pretty similar today still, but groundwater recharge probably has increased, yeah.
And of course, what we want is the pie needs to keep getting bigger too, conceptually.
Right. Well, that was interesting that Mr. Buckingham talked about higher and better uses. I think we can all agree that in most cases, potable reuse is going to be more important than irrigation, especially some of the lower order landscape and even golf course irrigation. Even though, you know, this morning you approved a golf course irrigation project, that water was going directly out to the ocean. So that's definitely an improved use of that water. I'll give you a couple of examples of irrigation uses. Here's a picture from the Watsonville area, strawberries watered with
reclaimed water produced by the city of Watsonville, distributed by the Mojave Valley Water Management Agency. A good case study for this type of reuse is the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project. They irrigate 12,000 acres, 45 miles of distribution pipe. They use about 60% of all the wastewater produced at the PCA's wastewater treatment plant. During the summer, that's close to 100% of the flow coming through that plant. Last summer, in July, August, and September, their average irrigation use was 845 acre feet per month, which is about 20 million gallons a day. So very large amounts of water, relatively speaking. That 20 million gallons per day directly offsets pumping that would have had to have occurred otherwise. So they, as the title suggests, what they're trying to do here is prevent additional seawater intrusion by shutting down those groundwater wells close to the ocean. You can see the artichokes there in the background. Here is a picture from the Hollister area. This is purple pipe water produced by the city of Watsonville and distributed by the San Bernardino County Water District.
So RD is produced in Watsonville?
Produced in Hollister, this one.
Okay. Yeah. So there's no connection between Watsonville and Hollister as far as sharing
no.
reclaimed water?
No.
And Harvey, all those are Title 24 and what? Denitrification or not?
Good question. These all comply with Title 22 regulations for the highest, Title 22 for the highest treated irrigation uses. Some of them are nitrogen removal and some are not. For instance, the plant in Gilroy, South County Regional Wastewater Authority, that one does remove most of the nitrogen before they recycle. Monterey Regional has no nitrogen removal, and Hollister versus Seal, I'm not sure. It's a fairly new plant, so they may have better nitrogen removal. Watsonville,
I don't think so.
No nitrogen removal. So we're counting on the irrigation uses to be done agronomically. They've got to take in, the farmers who use this reclaimed water have to take into account that they're getting nitrogen in their reclaimed water when they come up with their nitrogen budgets.
In the case of the Watsonville plant, their sewage treatment plant now, which has an ocean outfall, is not discharging basically through the whole irrigation season, the whole half the year. They're not discharging anything out of the ocean outfall because they're using all of it for either a limited amount for infiltration to groundwater and most of it, the purple pipe system to as an alternative to pumping in the coastal zone where they have seawater intrusion problems.
Yep. Golf courses, maybe a slightly lower quality use, but still a valuable use of the recycled water. This is Pebble Beach. And a golf course in the southern San Luis Obispo County area here. Actually, that's a fairly typical use with a smaller wastewater treatment plant. They'll treat their wastewater, put it in a storage pond, supplement it with pumped groundwater, and then irrigate the golf course. So I want to talk about potable reuse. That came up with the Morro Bay discussion also. There's two main types of potable reuse, indirect potable reuse. One is groundwater recharge and the other is storage in reservoirs. And in the groundwater part of that, there's two main uses. One is percolation ponds and the other is injection wells. So this board has recently approved two injection well projects for indirect potable reuse, the Cambry project and the Pure Water Monterey project. There are percolation pond uses in the state, but none in our region that are permitted from using Title 22. Neither do we have any reservoirs permitted for recycled water use. San Diego, I believe, is gonna be one of the first ones with construction starting in a couple of years. Direct potable reuse. And the difference between indirect and direct potable reuse is that indirect has the environmental buffer, either groundwater or the reservoir. Indirect potable reuse involves highly treating the water and putting it right back into the drinking water system. The legislature recently asked the State Water Board to study this option and to determine if regulations are feasible. And the State Board appointed an expert panel and an advisory panel and recently produced a report to the legislature that found that yes, it is feasible to produce regulations, or to write regulations for this type of use. There are some knowledge gaps that still need to be addressed and researched, but it's definitely doable.
Is it done anywhere in the world?
Yes, not in California, but there's a plant in Texas I'm aware of. What's that?
Wichita Falls.
Wichita Falls. And maybe Steve can get into some of this a little more in his presentation about what the State Board has done on this.
So Texas is the single example of existing.
I think there's a couple others, but that's the one that I can think of off the top of my head.
That's the top of the head.
Thank you.
And one of the last topics I want to talk about today is the recycled water policy. So the State Water Board adopted this policy in 2009, and it has several purposes. One of the main purposes is to encourage recycling. And let me read a snippet from the policy. State Water Board and regional water boards will exercise the authority granted to them by the legislature to the fullest extent possible to encourage the use of recycled water consistent with state and federal water quality laws. So we at the regional board level are directed by this policy to encourage as much recycling as we can. And that kind of, I think the Morro Bay discussion was a really good discussion to raise a lot of these issues and topics. And what we need to figure out is how we're going to do that. What options do we have to encourage that recycling? What authority exactly has been granted to us, and how do we use that authority? And we have the city manager here telling us that clearly the best and highest use of this water is go straight to indirect potable reuse. But the issues of cost are a major issue for the town. That even the long-term cost, it may be better to use the IPR over a secondary plant discharging to the ocean.
I was gonna maybe pivot here and encourage the dialogue. So often we, even within this office, we behave as distinct groups, but I think we need to explore where maybe the Central Coast Water Board and the State Water Board both have opportunity. So a community like Morro Bay is going to go to the State Revolving Fund and look for a way to finance their project. There is an opportunity there for us to potentially nudge their council through incentives or disincentives associated with their funding to select the option that is closer to a full recycled strategy. I think this is where we engage regional board members consistent with the WQCC discussion about engagement opportunities. As we look at a community somewhere in the region that needs to either get nudged along or needs help in where they're trying to go. We saw that Morro Bay is interested from a staff and consultant perspective in going to the term closed loop system, where they will have a high level of treatment and then put the water back in their groundwater basin. So they show clear interest in going there. How do we use all of our tools, or maybe better use all of our tools to push them in that direction?
So a question there, and maybe Carolyn can help answer that. Morro that we are designated? Okay, so the answer is yes. And therefore, part of a groundwater management plan, ultimately, you know, water augmentation is going to have to be part of the solution, because we know that the long-term solutions are augmentation, conservation, and innovation, and conservation alone is not going to help solve 100% of the problem when we're looking at, you know, climate change. And innovation likewise can be part of the solution, but a big portion can be augmentation. So I just want to float out there the nexus that part of the groundwater management plan to bring that basin, it's a medium priority?
It's a low and very low.
It's
not
a,
yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right, then I need to switch.
Well, can I follow up? So have you had conversations with DWR on the basin reprioritization process and whether or not there's information to reprioritize that basin? Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but along that line, is there any discussion on that?
Well, and even if more basin out, there's plenty of basins in the region that fall into that category.
I'm Carolyn Berg with the County of San Luis Obispo Public Works Department. We are waiting with bated breath to see what the new reprioritization of the Bulletin 118 basins looks like. At the moment, of our 23 groundwater basins in our county, six of those are considered higher medium priority, and we're not sure how bringing in the factors of the surface water and groundwater interaction might change some of the priorities of other basins, but the rest are really small coastal basins along our north coast, and so we'll see. I'm not sure that the factors would change enough to move Moro Basin up in priority, but we'll see, and then I think the region will react how needed. But like you heard Dave say, I think the city's still moving ahead with management practices as it needs to, and I think SGMA allows that low and very low priority basins can still pursue management actions. They're just not mandated like our other basins.
And then probably not going to get grant funding, obviously.
Yeah.
At least for GSPs.
And excuse me, while you're up there, you mentioned 23 basins. Are any of those, do you have any high priority basins in your county?
Yeah, we have three high priority basins. So the Paso sub-basin of the Salinas Valley is high priority and critically overdraft. We also have the Los Osos Valley Basin, which is also high priority and subject to critical overdraft. And then we have, let me run through them really quick, the Santa Maria Valley Basin, which is high priority but not subject to conditions of critical overdraft.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Carolyn. Glad you're here today. You said you're not sure how the reprioritization might reassess Moro Bay. They're also they also face seawater intrusion. So do you have an understanding of how seawater intrusion is being factored into the sustainability of the groundwater basin?
I'm trying to recall the Department of Water Resources, because that's done under the CASGEM program, and they had factors in there. I think one of the factors has to do with quality issues in a basin, but a lot more of them had to do with groundwater reliance, where City of Moro Bay is, you know, a lot more dependent on state water than groundwater, and population served and things like that.
Thank you, Carolyn. Appreciate you step in.
So is now the time to just talk? Okay. So I appreciate this discussion very much, and I think that the Moro Bay project offers us a model project as we move forward with all of these efforts, groundwater sustainability overall, whether they're low, medium, or high. I mean, coming from the perspective that all of our water is recycled for at least the last 4.6 billion years or so, I think we need to take a look at the perspective that we have to really take care of our resources. And our role as board members and working with the state and DWR to ensure that there's that local sustainability, there's that local reliability. You know, as we talk about the state water project and, you know, the overall impact at the state level, the water energy nexus, using a lot of energy to move our water around in the state is also, you know, impacting climate change, and it impacts the price point of the water. So I'm interested in doing whatever it is that we need to do at the board level to ensure that there's funding packages available to take a look at these model projects and help municipalities move forward. Municipalities, as we know, are faced with a bunch of different regulations and lots of challenges, but it would seem to me that there's cost savings and energy savings and untold other savings to investing in these projects from a grant and a loan perspective. And so whatever we can do to help put those packages together and think of creative ideas, I would be very happy to support.
Yeah, I think to your point is that 80% of the cost of water is the energy cost. And in fact, increasingly, when looking at water conservation and on a statewide level, you look at two aspects of it, is the conservation benefit of the water itself, but also the energy conservation associated with greenhouse gas emission. And as a matter of fact, certain grants have been justified utilizing the greenhouse gas emission avoidance in water saving projects.
Yeah, and certainly just we constantly come back to this, you know, viability of the state water project. So to think that, you know, 22 acre feet right now is going to remain 22 acre feet for the next 2, 5, 10, 20 years, I also think is just not the case. I mean, clearly that's speculative, but there's a lot of time and energy and money that goes into upkeeping that system. And so to the extent that we can take water that's locally available and not dump it back into the ocean, but keep it within that community and continue to pull as much out of those water droplets as we can, also increases the overall sustainability and reliability for the community. I think this is an important issue that we need to really focus on, you know, in the context of SGMA and IRWM and stormwater, and, you know, having that one water at the front of our vision all the time.
It's interesting that in this community water dialogue in Watsonville I reported on earlier, after going around and around on that question for years, a principle of unity you have to adopt to even walk into the room and be part of the conversation is that the solution is not an importation pipeline, that it's just not going to be state water project.
Yeah, it's, you know, we use the term sustainability. I would go as far as calling, if I, you know, was a local government in a city, is water security, is that you secure, you know, your water availability. Thing that has a different meaning from sustainability. It's basically the security for the city. And, you know, if we this year we didn't have these you know, high rainfall, and let's say we were in the scenario of another historical drought continuation, I would assume, and you know, Mr. Vice Chair probably firsthand has a peek at that, there would have been some serious rethinking about the allocations and using triage to getting down to absolute emergency use. Is that, Steve?
I'm not sure.
Well, in terms of allocation, you know, from the state pipeline.
Oh.
I mean, if
well, that's more Department of Water Resources.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's California water. And any other input? Dr. Hunter?
Well, I did give feedback to staff early on.
What's going on?
Okay.
That's Aaron, thank you, Aaron.
and I really appreciate Harvey expanding the discussion, because I think in our region, where we rely on 80% of our water comes from groundwater, so, and we have very little allocated from state water supply. So I want to recognize Morbid's process and also help bring it out through our process to alert the other coastal cities, you know, that communities have very hard decisions to make, and it is going to cost money to invest in infrastructure that will pay off. And I think it's all too easy for residents to think of a 10-year benefit or a burden when really we're talking about the next 50 years. So any way we can contribute to that dialogue and push it out so that local elected officials feel that they have, you know, that there's something behind these really hard decisions, that they are building on the long-term strategy that the state is encouraging, that the governor has shown tremendous leadership in, which I really appreciate. Not all governors are enlightened or inclined, I should say, to think so long-term. You know, it's just not inherent in the political system. But I think this is a great start at broadening that discussion and helping our citizens understand what we know, what we see coming down the line, what the technology supports, what the cost factors are going to be. And frankly, the sooner you get in line, the more likely you will get some assistance or get some help. And I sure hope that Morro Bay can, because they are facing seawater intrusion. And that's one of my frustrations, and I'll just keep it short, but I think seawater intrusion is very real for coastal communities and that use any of their coastal basins as part of the water supply. So in the long run, seawater intrusion will take out those basins, and where they fit into the SGMA process and into DWR's, you know, recognition of priority basins and so forth, and the threats to the sustainability of those basins. I just don't see it. I don't see the dots being connected the way I wish they would be connected. So that's my little tidbit. I know Mr. Moore is giving me the thumbs up. So, okay, that's it for me.
Mr. Bunters?
I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that I heard from the Morro Bay presentation, because I do think it highlights what a lot of local communities, jurisdiction, municipalities are challenged with and struggling with. And I heard a lot of recommendations offered to the community about subsidizing lower income families to be able to afford the rate increases. But I do think that there have been efforts, and it's a definite challenging one, but at the state level, to be able to provide something similar to the CARE program that you see with homes, energy bills, but we don't have that same kind of opportunity to offer state subsidies for homes with water and sewage bills, just because of the many restrictions placed on our funding sources for water infrastructure. The other comment that I wanted to make also had to do with what I heard in terms of some of the energy water nexus issues. I know that in the community of Watsonville, there is some energy recovery because of the installation of solar panels. And so I'm wondering too about the flexibility of funding to be able to, as our chair mentioned, to be able to offset some of the emissions or some of the impact associated with high energy processes, and being able to do that and thinking about funding those types of multiple benefit projects. And then the other piece was just a question regarding the purple pipe, because I know that the city of Watsonville does very well in terms of outreach and connecting local farmers and growers to purple pipe water, but I'm wondering with some of the other facilities in the region. How does that work? Do they require the user to pay for the purple pipe? Is that part of the reason why there isn't as much participation? Or is the issue that the water recycling facilities do not have the capacity to provide purple piping to growers in the region? And then the last question, I would just be curious to sort of see how this pie chart looks with the multiple facilities. I can see that some of the water recycling is for their own use, but I'm also curious when they're producing it, what is the water recycling going towards? Like, how does it look different from the statewide picture we saw in the pie chart?
Thank you.
Want me to address those? So, how the purple pipes get funded and how they decide who gets the water, I think varies from agency to agency. The Watsonville example, the farmers through the water or the Valley Water Management Agency are paying for the distribution costs. So it's directly funded by the farmers who are using the water. Same with the Watson or the Monterey area. Some of the urban uses, it's, you know, for instance, City of San Luis Obispo, most of the purple pipe uses are on city-owned projects. So the city's funding that, they're funding the production of the water and use of the water, even, and the benefit is that it decreases the use of the other potable water supplies. So, and it's not necessarily cheaper than, for instance, these San Luis Obispo's other water sources, but if the sources are limited, it gives you additional sources, diversifies sources, and increases reliability. And can you expand a little bit on the second question? I wasn't sure I caught that.
So the other piece of that is under currently producers of recycled water, I was trying to understand what the issue was in terms of for irrigation purposes, why there isn't more people using purple pipe.
Right. Well, it's a combination of factors, costs and availability and location. Some, we'll hear from Santa Barbara later today, and we'll talk about their study of indirect potable reuse. And the city of Santa Barbara is not very close to much irrigated ag, so that probably isn't going to fit into their options for recycled water use. City of Santa Maria, why aren't they doing it more? That's a good question. It's probably, well, cost is a big issue. They can't produce recycled water for the same amount that it costs to pump groundwater. And as long as there is enough groundwater, the farmers are going to take the cheaper option. The reason we see it in these coastal communities like Castroville and Watsonville is because of the seawater intrusion. Once the farmers see and other users see that their water supply is going to disappear if they don't fix it, that's definitely a motivation. Either pay the extra money or you don't have water. So that's what they're doing there.
So, sorry, can I say something?
Sure.
So I just had, I guess, a question. What's the opportunities, John, maybe, to answer, that we have as the board to partner with entities in the Central Coast to make it easier to incentivize model projects such as Moron Bay rather than the carrot and stick, but how can we partner?
Part of today's discussion revealed the complexity, the number of variables that are in play, like the cost of water or the absence of an ocean outfall, for example, to get rid of the salts or the reject component. You know, if I'm an inland wastewater treatment plant, what am I going to do with the reject from an RO facility, reverse osmosis facility? You know, there's complexity and challenges, you know, different variables for different communities. I was recording a few this a couple times in our discussion. The funding component that's coming from state board so that we have a conversation with the funding source and figure out potentially new ways to integrate our desired outcome with the funding. You know, they come together. So whether it's a disincentive or a requirement of the funding, explore if there's options there. Because we know they're going to the state revolving fund for the funding their upgrade, we would like that to be the upgrade that includes some form of recycling. At a very granular level, participate with the individual city council members such that we can push the agenda of water security or diversification of their water portfolio, their water supply portfolio, and think long term as much as possible as leaders of their communities, to think as in terms of long term rather than boxing in the future generation to higher water costs or a dependency on a water system that may or may not deliver, keeping it local and as decision makers, making the decision that secures their water. I also, in that specific function, will look to board members to participate in those discussions too. I think that's consistent with what we've talked about engagement at the board level. And we have a variety of small communities up and down our coast that will battle these decisions in the next years. You know, Morro Bay's not unique. They were just opportune. You know, they're literally in that decision-making struggle right now for this conversation. But I will look to engage the board members. I think at the staff level, we need to push on those that we permit. We have a permitting authority here, and we need to use that to the extent we can. It gets a little fuzzy. Harvey put up the slide about, and if you want to jump back, you know the slide I'm referencing about the recycled water policy language. Right there. Okay, so that is wonderful weasel wording right there. To the fullest extent possible. It doesn't say require, it's not black and white. So what does that mean? And then we have to test that. You know, I mean in a bunch of different ways, and that may include litigation ultimately, but we have to figure out what that means, find the line. And that line, honestly, it changes in time too. But I think we haven't explored that as far as we can as a region. And we'll use good legal counsel to find out how far we can go, and can we bend and stretch there?
Yeah, and if I may, I think drawing on my experience with the Central Valley Board, we've come across issues very similar to this, not just in the recycled water aspect, but also in trying to compel communities towards regionalization, which the Central Valley Board, I believe other boards, have adopted resolutions strongly supporting regionalization, because we all well know the impacts that are associated with a number of small facilities as regulatory requirements change over time, and I think you've heard some of that today. So we at the Central Valley Board kind of also try and tread that fine line between the mandates passed down by the State Board to encourage, strongly encourage, and the mandates of the Water Code, which prevent us as regional boards in general from specifying the manner in which entities comply with our orders. And I think your executive officer is right. There's a significant legal gray area in that between the two, between just simple encouragement and specifying the manner of compliance. Certainly the board can utilize its authority to set a very high bar for any entity that does not want to recycle, that does not want to regionalize, to demonstrate that they have explored, fully costed out, and appreciate the environmental and sociological and economic impact associated with choosing what the board may consider to be a short-sighted decision. So, and I want to follow on that notion that we have a permitting authority. Is it an extraordinary authority here?
just have to make it perfunctory, you know. So that's where we can explore, acknowledging what Patrick just said, that we can't specify means of compliant, we can specify what is non-compliant. And that authority rests with the collective of us. We can counsel and you can follow through with dischargers who we don't think are appropriately considering recycling options. And let me see if I covered them all. Okay, last one was, we brought up the issue of data, and that which gets measured, that which we measure gets done. And in Harvey's development of this presentation, he struggled with trying to get quality or clarity on where recycled water was being spent, and he's relying on 8-year-old data. We, at this region, we can require clarity on how the water is being spent, recycled water. And then we can have conversations with the State Water Board that become something that's built into our information management system, so that it doesn't need to be a survey to every 8 years to understand how recycling, a core strategy for us in a drought-ridden state, how recycled water is getting spent, or how much is being generated in any given time. So there's a data component, and we talked about this when we had a CEC discussion in January. There's always a data component that's involved here. So we can influence our information management system such that we can ask for and then deliver in reports, so we can understand and deliver to decision makers important information that assists the decision making process. And I think that's all the action items I got, and I'm open to others too.
So Mike, yes, Steve,
could I offer some?
Sure.
Steve Moore, State Water Board member. Just wanted to share a little development on the recycled water policy front. In December of last year, we adopted a resolution to update the recycled water policy. And there's a lot of detail in that resolution about measurement. What we learned during the drought and mandatory reporting, which, by the way, is still in effect even with the rescission of the conservation standards this month, we still have mandatory reporting for water production data. We saw the power, the good power, for the people of having that data assembled and high data quality reported on a regular basis and used by the media, used by locals to compare their performance to each other. There's no reason why we can't do that with recycled water. And in these discussions at the statewide level, there's policy discussions about recycled water and conservation. Should we conserve recycled water? I, for one, believe we should. It's one water. We need to conserve all water sources. But in that policy debate, the clear need for consistent information on recycled water production is clearly evident. And as the executive officer points out, we can, at the regional board level, require that data to be reported as it relates to our permitting systems. We just want to be careful that it's aggregated appropriately in the consistent, efficient way that we were able to achieve with the water production data reporting in the last 3 years. So it's high on our list, and I completely agree that surveying is no way to do it. In fact, that was the issue with water production data until 2013 or 2014. It was all based on surveys, and DWR would get about 67% response in surveys, and you guess how valuable that data set was? Not at all, not useful. We had to have mandatory reporting in order to get useful information statewide for the first time in our history. So it's an important issue.
Steve, why is it important, Steve, to, I lost the word that you mentioned, compile the data rather than being able to pull it apart?
Well, simplicity goes a long way. And so we wanna make sure that we don't embark on a fragmented approach to this. Each region doing it their own way. We need a statewide recycled water accounting system, just like we now have for water production. And we had it with Division of Drinking Water. I don't mean to completely discount the past. We had annual reporting, but it had limited value compared to monthly reporting. That was what we learned. So my point is that we need to work together, the regions and the state, if we're going to use, and it's in the resolution in December, you know, that we're going to look at the authorities we have and how we get this stuff measured and reported up. You know, it's easier said than done, and we want to do it carefully and not in a fragmented fashion.
So
I was just going to say, I think Mr. Moore's use of the production water reporting is a great analog for how to get out this recycled water reporting. And I also echo his thought that we don't, as a region, want to have this reporting development in a vacuum. The information management system is funded and built through state board. And so even if we created independent reporting, we don't have an information management system to hang the responses in that would allow us to collate a report and put in front of you or anybody else. So I think that's a conversation that has to happen at the, you know, the collective regions and state board.
Yeah, and also the producers. You know, I've spent half my career as in the consulting world working for sewer agencies and the like, and we have to make sure that we don't, you know, make this as simple as possible. We were able to kind of do that on the fly, thanks to some talented people in our Division of Drinking Water. You know, there's a human story there why we were able to pull things off. And so we just, you know, want to respect that. Also, I want to reiterate that this policy is going to be updated, and our staff are going to have, the plan was to have a draft policy in March 2018. And then have a science review panel process kicked off from that point, because we'll be looking at issues like constituents of emergency concern and that sort of thing. So just want to get that on your radar screen, and that's not good. We're not going to do that in a vacuum. We're going to be working with the regions and updating the policy, because if you look at the existing policy, our relationship with recycled water has changed since 2009. That pie you saw, there is actually a significantly higher potable reuse portion now. You know, Orange County just increased their groundwater, the GWRS system from, what was it? It was like 60 MGD to 100, and they have plans to go to 130 MGD groundwater IPR project.
Thank you, Steve. So I had a couple of comments too. You know, one of them, you know, hearing the presentation earlier, you know, a big emphasis was on the dollar sign. And my view is, you pay now, you pay later. And you're gonna pay later, you're gonna pay a heck of a lot more. So there, that's your options. That's point one. Point two is the path of least resistance is, well, let's do phase one, and then we'll do phase two later. Quite frankly, and I'm not suggesting this will be the case of Morro Bay, but we've seen these kind of examples before, and it's coined kicking the can down the road. So then it's, well, phase two, when is it going to be? 5 years, 10 years from now? Or when we have the next serious drought, and then all of a sudden it's like, let's hurry up and build it? So it just, you know, from a 30,000 foot elevation, and I'm oversimplifying, but as Vice Chair Moore said, you know, keep things simple. There is an issue there. I certainly agree that, and I have a very simple saying about it too, using the similar terminology, but you cannot manage what you don't measure. It's very simple. I mean, that certainly applies here. There was a little discussion in the ask here about putting solar panels. And I had a little conversation about the solar panels, and the more I think about it, it's like, well, what about bioreactor? You know, you're going to put solar panels, spend money putting solar panels when you can actually recycle the methane. So the point made to me was, well, our plant is too small. And I disagree with that, because we do have many, many dairy farms in the Central Valley who do have viable bioreactors, you know, from dairies. So I, you know, I'm putting a little engineering question on that answer. Because I'm just thinking about, okay, you put solar panel, yet you're not using the available energy that you're producing. And we can take many good examples in the local communities where we do have, you know, plants which produce basically most of their energy needs. And in this instance, even if it was 50%, well, guess what? You're producing 50% day and night. You know, solar panels don't work well at night. So that's my other point. And then lastly, there's a little supporting comment to Ms. Cervantes, where she had a question about purple pipes, and then you gave some of the answers. Harvey, is that typically you have two approaches. One, you have recycled water being provided at, I'll call it the retail level, where it's individually metered and all the infrastructure is paid by the entity that produces the recycled water. The other one is basically wholesale. You got an end of a line somewhere, you take over, you build your infrastructure, you do your own metering, and we just sell it to you wholesale. And then you have, usually it's an irrigation district or a mutual water company that then handles all the administration. The benefit there is that there is a reduction in cost, because the water that's being sold as recycled water does not have to include the, you know, fixed development cost. And then through the irrigation district or a mutual water company, you basically set up a means of self-funding. An example is that currently, as we speak, the city of San Luis Obispo is in negotiation with the Inland Valley Mutual Water Company for a purple pipe using this scenario that I share, which is at the end of the city limit, the mutual water company takes over, pays for the entire infrastructure, the metering, etc., and buys the water wholesale. And then you have, lastly, you have a tier system, because remember, water treatment plant, we don't stop flushing in the winter, right? But growers use less water in the winter for irrigation. So you have to be able to manage and allocate these water use. So anyway, that was kind of my own little input here. And I know that Mr. Johnson patiently was waiting also to make some comments.
Yeah, the only thing that struck me was, you know, I think in a lot of cases Sigma is causing water agencies to really take a more holistic look at how they're handling water from provision to waste treatment, the whole nine yards. And in the case of Morro Bay, I think part of what was causing them to really take a look at this is they need to move their waste treatment plant further away from the coast, which makes it a kind of an obvious time to look at everything. I'm just wondering, given that all that stuff flows downhill and we are a coastal region, how many of the waste treatment plants in our region are situated in such a way that in the next couple of decades, not a very long time in the waste treatment world, they're going to be having to look at seriously considering moving them? I mean, I read recently that now, some expert panel was saying maybe we should be saying the upper limit of what we can reasonably expect in California by the end of the century is 10-foot sea level rise, because all of our, we're hitting the top limits of all of our projections right now. So I'm just kind of curious. It's only tangentially related to the recycling, but it certainly seems like the folks who are in that situation of having to really reimagine their plumbing system, it's a pretty much of a no-brainer to be looking at all of this. Do we have any sense off the, I know we gave direction 3 or 4 years ago in the, probably when Roger was the executive officer, to that in our permitting of and renewal of waste treatment plant permits, we should be looking at the question of sea level rise and proximity and such. But I don't know how much we've been, I don't know where we are on that.
I can't give you a number, but it's certainly all or most of the coastal wastewater treatment plants, you know, from Santa Cruz down to Carpinteria, need to be looking at that, whether they're all in danger of sea level rise, I'm not sure, but I know many of them have to be.
I guess in terms of the question of what we as a board can do within the limits of our authority to entice, cajole, encourage people to move towards recycled water, it seems like that's a piece of it as well. And I'm just curious and could hear back at some later time as to how in the process of looking at these periodic renewals of permits, kind of how we're examining that.
Right. So yeah, I think you raised a really interesting point. So there's an opportunistic or an opportunity here associated with sea level rise where they'll have to address that. And can that be an opportunity for us to also address recycling with them? You know, the sort of holistic water usage.
That's correct. And the fundamental question, that sort of the threshold question for that is, to what extent are we really actively making that a part of the permit renewal process? Not the recycling question, but
right.
The sea level rise question.
Yeah, being submerged, right.
And actually, you know, this falls, I think, nicely with a renewed, I guess I'll call it, directive that will is suggested from the State Water Board is the aspect of climate change. And that was an item of discussion at the chair's meeting and most likely will be an item of discussion in at WQCC. Steve?
Resolution
right.
March 7th, the comprehensive response to climate change.
So each region is going to be asked down the road, okay, what are your activities and engagement in looking at impact of climate change? And this actually started about 3 to 4 years ago when there were two directives. One of them was environmental justice, which we assigned Dr. Hunter to assist us as being liaison with the state board, and then the other one, climate change. And that went dormant a bit because of the impact of the drought that kind of redirected everybody's focus, but now it's coming back. So to your point, no, there's a good nexus there, and there's actually some maps that I forgot who generated it, but I obtained it from Fran, you know, when she was still on the board, that shows the worst case, medium, medium case, and most optimistic case, and it shows the flooded areas along our coast. And indeed, as you go toward the northern part of our regional board territory, that seems to be the areas because of the low-lying area where you have more impact.
Yeah,
so to round things up, any additional comments? Okay. So, any concluding remark,
I appreciate the discussion. I think this is a great item. This is at the core of how we respond to climate change. I think recycling is a core counter strategy to climate change. You know, and I know we just kind of linked the two with when we talked about sea level rise, but from where I sit, this whole discussion is a counter strategy to climate change.
All right.
So thanks.
So, Harvey, want to thank you for putting this presentation together. Obviously, it stimulated a lot of conversation, and I think this is a topic where it has just begun. You know, we need to keep bringing this back to the forefront, because as we all agree, it's not going to go away. If anything, it's going to become more and more critical. I also want to thank representative of the city of Morro Bay to come and being a active participant in this conversation. Thank you. So at this time, we will break for lunch in 1 hour.
It's slated for 75 minutes.
So because
we're
going to
have a closed session.
Okay.
Correct. We'll have a closed session at lunch.
So you do the math for me.
Okay, 75 minutes. It's, why don't we say, is that 2 o'clock, 1:55?
Yeah, let's make round it to 2.
Call it 1:55 and we'll actually start at 2.
All right, so thank you very much.
Jessica, this is Aaron. Do you want me to call you back at 1:55? Oh,
just to notice what we're going to talk about in closed session. We are going to talk about on the agenda petitions related to the ag order, an update on the Zamora case, and potential